This is Money, brought to you in partnership with NS&I, giving you 100% security for your savings.
A very warm welcome to This Is Money and Share Radio podcast in partnership with NS&I. I'm Georgie Frost here with you on DAB across the country, online and through the Share Radio mobile app every weekday from 9 until midday, sharing ideas about money. I'm joined today by editor Simon Lambert and consumer affairs editor Lee Boyce to go through some of the stories they've been looking at this week. And a worrying time for savers and for spenders, from Brexhaustion to Brexcuses. Lloyds axes a further 3,000 jobs. NatWest warns of negative rates and threats to Santander's 123 account holders. Can we really blame Brexit uncertainty, though?
It seems a bit odd to me that at a time when profits are up, they're cutting jobs by, you know, well, it's now gone up an extra 3,000 up to 12,000.
Banks make their money really from the difference between what they pay depositors and what they charge borrowers. When interest rates are very low, this thing called the net interest margin gets squeezed, and it is tough for banks to make money.
But what is negative interest anyway? Is it such a problem?
As a business account holder and a personal account holder, I pay money for my bank accounts. And actually, that is hugely much more than any interest I get.
Well, it comes as we're hearing the City Watchdog has watered down its demands on providers to show how much extra interest savers could get elsewhere. And a worrying number of those in their 30s and 40s only able to focus on the here and now.
It's much, much harder for this age group to actually make significant savings at this point in time, and they're very much concentrated on just meeting the bills.
Also today, you probably pay yours off in full, but the 5 million credit cards that may never be cleared is a problem for all of us, so says Simon. Some concerning stats this week reveal the country's true addiction to plastic.
The problem is, if you're just making minimum repayments, the interest can actually increase how much you are outstanding once the charges go on. Your balance just creeps further and further away, out of control.
Meanwhile, the Bank of England say credit card lending increased by 0.6 billion in June compared to 0.4 billion over the previous 6 months. How do we get back into the black? But we are asking today on the theme of credit cards, how addicted are you? It may be a bit personal, but how many do you have? And do you have one big memorable credit card splurge that you perhaps wouldn't have done had you had cold, hard cash in your hand? A very good morning to you, Lee. Smile on your face.
Morning,
welcome,
Georgie,
to the studio.
Actually, I've always been quite sensible when it comes to credit cards, but I do remember starting university when I was 18, and my mum said it was very important for me to get a credit card to build up a credit rating for the future. So I did get one out. I didn't use it very much. But of course, towards the end of my studies and my overdraft being maxed out, I did fall into the credit card trap. And I paid it off really quickly when I started a job. I do have one now, but I actually use it to book mainly sort of holidays and flights because of the extra protection when you spend over £100, which has been highlighted, of course, by the low-cost holidays going bust last week. Because if you paid on your credit card, you probably got a whole bigger chance of getting your money back. So I'm just very sensible and heading into my 30s, and that's how I use my credit card.
I don't doubt you're very sensible, and your mum is also very trusting. My university credit card experience was I got one because they offered a free football. That was really it. I now have two. Big memorable credit card splurge, though, have you had one ever? You're too sensible, aren't you?
Not particularly, no, not that I can really
not
remember.
Not a big holiday?
No. If I will book a holiday on it, but I will pay off pretty quickly.
All right, Simon, for you. I do appreciate I am asking the wrong people this, to be fair. But Simon, for you,
that was a disturbingly sensible answer from me, wasn't it? The youth of today, honestly, managing their money, doing sensible things, protecting their purchases. I do have a credit card. I have two credit cards, both with Barclaycard. Don't ask me why I have two. One's just one I've had for ages. In fact, they sent me a letter saying that they might even cancel it. But it's one I've always held on to because I think it's always good to have it as like an emergency backup to be able to access that cash. But the other credit card I've got is a Barclaycard one that's got a low rate on it. So it's like a permanent low rate card. So it's about 6.something%, which is great because it means that you can spend money and then you can pay it off over a couple of months and you don't get hit by high interest. The only problem is I have this really nasty habit of basically buying something on it, and then because it's got a direct debit set up for the minimum payment, forget to pay the bill, and I don't pay the bill for about 3 months. And because it's got this low rate, it's only ever, the interest only amounts up to like a couple of quid, like literally probably less than a fiver over those months. But the problem is you then turn around and you go, oh, God, I've got £1.5 grand on my credit card I need to pay off that you've completely forgotten about.
Whoops.
And all of a sudden, you're like, oh, I'd forgotten I needed to pay that off. So, like, big purchases, like we just bought a sofa. I paid for that on the credit card, a holiday. But I did big credit card splurge. I did it early on, actually. Mm-hmm. When I worked in France after I left school, I worked in a ski resort. And not knowing what I know now about credit cards and spending like that, instead of going and getting a bank account and a debit card to take money out with, I got a credit Barclay card and I took money out of the cash machine with a credit card. Ooh. And sort of ran up the money, and then I'd get, because I got paid in English money and the aim was that I'd pay it off. And actually I ran up more than I should have done and I never paid it off. And I probably incurred an unbelievable amount of charges for taking money out of the cash machine. And then later that year, I then went to Australia, ran up some more money. So I ended up with about £800 or £900 on my credit card before I went to university, which taught me a valuable lesson about not running up big bills on credit cards. But I can tell you a funny story about a credit card.
You got
one for a football. Mm-hmm. Right, this goes back to the pre pre-financial crisis years, basically, when money was easy. Me and my mate are at a Watford game, standing there at half-time having a beer out the back of the stands. By the bar, I should say, we hadn't smuggled in beers. And this girl comes up and says, do you want a free hat? We were like, yeah, okay. She said, do you want a free Watford hat? We said, yeah, okay. She said, great, all you have to do is sign up for this credit card. We said, well, I'm sure that it doesn't really work like that. She said, no, it's fine, just fill in the form, it's fine. And then I'll give you the hat. And we said, well, we don't really want to apply for the credit card. Can we have the hat anyway? She said, no, you just fill in the form, it doesn't do anything. And we said, well, actually, I think you probably get credit checked. And she said, no. So he was like, so I turned down the hat.
I was going to say, did you get a hat?
I turned down the hat. My friend on the other hand said, yeah, sure, give me the form. And then filled it in with fake details, but half fake details. And he got the hat. Lo and behold, 2.5 years later, he finds out that he's got a black mark on his credit record because he got turned down for the credit card.
No. But the question is, does he still have the hat?
I don't know.
Consuming Issues with Georgie Frost. Weekdays from 9 till 12. Wants your feedback. Contact the programme by tweeting at Share Radio UK. Text 66777 and start the text with the word share. Or email consumingissues@shareradio.co.uk. If it's about money and it matters to you, it matters to us.
What was brilliant was throughout that, Lee, can I ask you, what are you drinking at the moment?
I'm having a tea.
A cup of tea, yeah. Mm. A cup of tea. Simon, I think it's fair to say you and I are probably quite substantially older than Lee. He's there, you know, with his cup of tea, just thinking, look at you two. Look at you two. All right, Lee. All right. I'm Georgie Frost. You're listening to Share Radio. The team from the finance website of the year, This Is Money, are in the studio with me in partnership with NS&I. Those laughs you're hearing, consumer affairs editor Lee Boyce and editor Simon Lambert. Now, let's talk about the nation's mattresses and jam jars. Yes, they've never had it this good since the run on Northern Rock in 2007. Just how low can banks go? That was what savers were asking this week. As the possibility of you being charged for banks holding your cash took a step closer. NatWest and RBS sent out a letter to around 1.3 million of their combined business and commercial customers, warning they may have to introduce negative interest rates in the future, blaming low global rates. The threat has come as the Bank of England rate cut is widely forecast next month following the Brexit vote and after a number of central banks have gone negative around the world. Here's Sky's Willem Marks.
When they set their interest rates at negative, and we've seen that already in Japan, in Switzerland and Denmark, to name but a few, it's quite a controversial measure. Essentially, it's intended to encourage lending, to boost inflation, to spark economic growth.
So with NatWest and RBS mulling over rate cuts, we then heard the UK's most popular current account is looking at slashing its headline rate. What on earth will Jessica Ennis, Rory McIlroy and Jensen Button think?
You could get 1% cash back on your monthly Santander mortgage payments.
You could get 3% cash back on your mobile bills.
You could be earning 3% interest on balances between £3,000 and £20,000.
sporting celebs there extolling the virtues of the Santander 123 account. And it clearly worked. At least 3.8 million of us are thought to use this account, the first to offer cash back on household bills and paying rates of interest that you won't find, let's be honest, in many other places, but not for long, perhaps. Those with between 3,000 and 20,000 in their account used to get 3%. It's thought that would be cut to a flat rate of 2%, a potential loss of hundreds of pounds a year. And don't forget, it was only back in January that the account increased its monthly charge from £2 to £5. So firstly, let's go to NatWest, shall we, and negative interest rates. I'm going to come to you, if you don't mind, Simon, first. What does going negative mean anyway? What is the purpose of it?
Basically, the situation is that we're talking about an interest rate cut in this country. But we have interest rates, you know, the base rate, which is used by the Bank of England to influence the economy, monetary policy, how much money is created by banks when they issue loans, sits at 0.5%. Now, there's talk that it'll be cut to 0.25%. The question of whether Britain would go negative is very much up in the air. I mean, I'm not so sure the Bank of England would go negative. But in other places, there are negative interest rates. In Switzerland, it's 0.75%. In the Eurozone, the ECB rate is minus 0.4%. Japan has negative rates. Sweden has negative rates. Denmark has negative rates. What this means is that central banks have decided to have a negative rate on commercial banks' excess funds that they hold on deposit at the bank. So effectively, the central bank is charging them money for putting that money on deposit with the central bank. And the idea is that by doing that, it encourages them not to hold on to cash, excess cash that they've got, and instead to use that excess cash as a way of basically setting against their balance sheet so they keep growing their loan books and lend more money out into the economy and create more money. Now, obviously, this brings a cost to banks, which banks have largely shied away from passing on to their customers. However, we wrote a story late 2015 about a Swiss bank.
I remember you talking about it on this show.
Yeah, that actually had passed on that rate. I'm just trying to look up its name here. I can't remember it. But it's basically a very
alternative
sort of niche...
Bankschweiz? Is that the
Schweiz? Yeah, alternative Bankschweiz. And it's quite a unique bank because I think it's kind of very much an ethical bank and that they thought that they could, you know, pass this on to their customers. And they said, well, look, we're taking a big hit from this, so we've got to pass it on. But largely banks have not passed it on to their customers. But NatWest wrote to their customers this week saying there is this scenario of potential negative rates. It's not necessarily going to happen, but it might happen. And if it does happen, just to warn you, we might end up having to charge you. So what would happen, for example, if NatWest imposed a negative rate of minus 0.1% is you put £1,000 on deposit with NatWest, and at the end of the year, you've got £999, which is the opposite way round to if NatWest had a positive interest rate of plus 0.1%, which you might think is unlikely, but the FCA revealed that many banks were, in fact, paying so little interest recently, and then you'd get £1 on your £1,000, basically, over a year. But what's interesting is that they wrote to their business customers.
Well, absolutely. They're not their consumer customers, although does that rule that out completely? And as Simon says there, we should point out it's not come in.
Well, it doesn't rule it out completely, but let's take a step back here. I mean, NatWest has written to 850,000 of its small business customers and business customers. It's a massive holder of business accounts.
Charities and small businesses as well.
They're going to be the most affected, I would suggest, with this. But also, let's not forget, a lot of businesses pay for their banking already, so they might not be making money on their account because rates are so low anyway. So if you've got money held in a current account, unless you've got a specialised current account, it's very likely you are not making much money on any balances that you have on your account. And if you're getting charged, you know, X amount of money a month for business banking anyway, the likelihood is you're sort of paying negative interest, but in just packaged up in a different way.
We actually spoke to one of such people, Chris Bailey of Financial Orbit, who actually doesn't think this is such a big deal because of exactly what you've said.
My thoughts on this are, look, it's a function of very low interest rates, clearly. If we do see the Bank of England in early August cut interest rates further, it makes it much more likely. But let's face it, here's my observation. As a business account holder and a personal account holder, I pay money for my bank accounts. And actually, that way is hugely much more than any interest I get. So effectively, I'm already paying for banking. And, you know, this is just a further manifestation of that, albeit it's a bit of a surprise. So we'll have to see on that front. But my thoughts are actually more people are already paying on a net basis for bank accounts than people think. Look, banking is a service. You're probably going to have to pay for it. And in these days of ultra-low interest rates, it's going to cost you money net-net. You know, clearly, what is the function of very low interest rates? At the big picture level, it's to try to get people to spend money, be it businesses or be it consumers. By spending money, you try and boost the economy. And then if you boost the economy sufficiently, maybe interest rates can go back up to what we would regard from our childhoods or young adulthoods as sensible levels in the sort of the 5 to 8% level or something like that. But we'll have to see. So it's a function of crisis.
So pretty much confirming what you said there, Lee, that was Chris Bailey of Financial Orbit. Why particularly NatWest and RBS?
Well, they have such a massive amount of business customers, as I alluded to just a minute ago. That means actually, you know, if there are big businesses that have money in some of these accounts, they might be sort of not paying for their account because they might be getting a little sliver of interest on it. But, you know, they're just a massive organisation. And if someone's going to sort of do something first, you know, RBS are one of the big boys that would potentially start sounding this out. I actually found it a little bit of a strange one to start sending out now when, you know, base rate's at 0.5%. We've got a rate decision next week. And, of course, there's a lot of talk about it being cut. But the last decision...
We said that last time.
Yeah, and the last decision, it was 8-1. You know, they voted 8-1 to keep it at 0.5%. So the chance it might stay the same 0.5% anyway. And NatWest has just jumped the gun a little bit here, in my opinion.
We can play our favourite game there of where will the interest rates go next, indeed. But other banks, I suppose, do you expect them to follow suit in this sort of warning?
I think HSBC warned as well this week. Mm-hmm. But yes, I think they will. I think if you start to see one bank do it, then you'll start to see other banks do it. But like Lee said, I think we're a long way off. But just to pick up on the point there about business banking, is that basically the reason why any bank would do this to their business customers first is that you think normal customers don't switch their bank accounts enough, you know, and there's all this stuff made to try and make them do it. Business banking is unbelievably sticky. Basically, businesses have lots to gain from moving their bank accounts, but they hardly ever do it, largely because they're basically worried about it, because their bank account is so essential to the running of their business. The application process can be quite a bit more convoluted. They're worried about what might happen if they shift over and something goes wrong. And also then you've got things like their overdraft and their loans and things like that. And so they just don't move. But, you know, businesses get charged for their banking. I've got the NatWest standard tariff in front of me. So basically, payments out of your account, backs direct debit. These are automated payments taken by direct debit, 40p per transaction. Standing orders, 45p per transaction. Internet faster payment. So basically, if you just pay someone using your online banking, like you or I would do, they'll charge you 40p for that. Then payments into your account. And then this is another one. Businesses get charged for paying cash into their account. You know, so cash paid in at branches, charge per £100 of cash paid into your account at either a NatWest counter or a post office counter, 66p per £100 paid in. Now that effectively is providing you with a negative interest rate, isn't it? Yeah. Because it eats into the money that you pay in. Automated credit. So someone pays money automatically into your account. That'll be 22p per transaction, please. And these fees really do build up for businesses. And I'm being a bit unfair here because that's their standard tariff and they've probably got packages that bundle these up and make it cheaper and everything like that. But businesses pay for their banking. And if you do have a business, it genuinely is worth seeing if you can switch your bank account because you've probably got a lot to gain from it.
Talking about bank accounts, let's turn over to Santander, shall we? We did mention that. Lee, firstly, just give us an idea. How popular was this account? Why was it so popular?
This current account has been the most popular, you know, since it launched a few years back. I believe, actually, there's something like 4 million people now have this Santander 123 account. It offers up to 3% interest on balances up to £20,000, which is far better than anywhere on the high street right now. You cannot get a 3% rate. Even if you fix for 5 years, you can't get a 3% rate. It also offers some cash back on a variety of bills. And for that reason, it's just been massively popular. And now it looks like the good days may be over.
Why? What's going on now? Because remember, there was a big change that happened only in January, wasn't there?
Indeed. So they've sneakily bought in make it acceptable to pay for your bank account anyway. It was a £2 monthly fee. Now, in January, they put it up to £5 a month, which doesn't sound that much. But actually, if you haven't got big balances in your account, the likelihood is it's not a good account for you anymore. So a lot of people got a bit irate about that. But this latest move is really going to irk people because MoneyMail, our sister title, has got some information suggesting that they are going to reduce the 3% rate to 2%.
And that would be flat across everybody. So currently customers earn 1% on balances up to 1,000, 2% on 3,000, and 3% if they have between 3 and 20,000. So they just say across the board, right?
Yeah, so it won't be tiered anymore. It will be just one flat rate, which actually, if you've only got up to £1,000 in there, you're going to be a little bit better off with this account now. But a lot of people will have maxed this out at £20,000, especially savvy This Is Money readers who have used this account to the absolute maximum because they are financially savvy. They've realised that if they've got up to £20,000, you know, they can't really park it anywhere and get that sort of risk-free 3% rate. But for Santander, it's almost been a victim of its own success because so many people have opened this account. It is the most popular one to switch to by an absolute country mile. It's had, I think, something like 500,000 more people go into it than switch out of it because people love that interest element of it. But it must be costing the business an absolute fortune. And that's why that £5 a month raise came in, and that's why they're now talking about getting rid of this interest element. But it's called the 123 account, so you can't start just calling it the 2 account. Or, you know, why not keep the 123 aspect and just, instead of having a £20,000 maximum, lower that maximum to like £5,000. At least then you can still call it the 123 account. But, you know, I've had a feeling this is going to happen for a while, if I'm being quite honest with you. I think that monthly hike in fees was the first sort of sign. You can't be offering 3% interest on £20,000 when an easy access account is, you're lucky to get, you know, 1.5%.
And they did cut their Help to Buy ISA recently by quite a lot, didn't they?
There's been a lot of ISA cuts. There's been a lot of savings cuts across the entire, you know, industry. It's so hard for regular savers at the moment to get good returns.
And I suppose for Santander, they know that there aren't many other places you can go, right?
And the bank might be actually getting a little bit fed up that people are just treating this current account like a savers account. Yeah. You know, they might actually not have much activity on the account. Instead, they're just parking £20,000 in there to get
the likes of you 3%. And I have been recommending current accounts, haven't we?
Exactly. I mean, current accounts have become the new savings accounts because not only Santander, but you've got Nationwide, you've got TSB, you've got Lloyds, all offering up to 5% interest because they realise how much a winner it is for people. You know, savers are starved of interest. Get them to open up current accounts instead. They can cross-sell them a whole plethora of other products. It's much more beneficial for a bank to have you as a current account customer than a saver. And lots of banks have cottoned onto this.
I should point out, a spokesman for Santander did speak to you guys and said, "We do not comment on speculation. If we were to make a change to any of our banking products, including the 123 current account, we would write to our customers, providing them with 60 days notice." Is it contract that you sign with banks, or is it something else?
Well, that 60-day notice period is a standard in the banking industry for current accounts and savings. So if your savings rate was about to get cut, they have to write to you and give you 60 days notice so you can switch out of that savings account. So it's similar with a current account, and with the 7-day switching now, it is actually far easier to switch your current account. So if you're on, if that 2% cut does definitely come in and you're going to be worse off on it, it's so easy to switch away now that it's getting a lot looser. And Simon was talking about small business accounts there and them being worried about switching. That was a problem a couple of years ago in the whole, you know, personal current account, you know, thinking about your direct debits and your pay, you know, your wages. With this 7-day switching, it has made it a lot easier. I haven't heard any complaints from people that have used the service saying it didn't work. So I think what we could see is a mass exodus from the Santander account if this happens.
Where would they go, Lee?
Well, it depends if other banks start cutting their interest.
Absolutely.
But there are some really, you know, quite good deals out there at the moment, and a lot of them are offering, you know, like £100 a switch and that sort of thing. But the best interest, if that is what you want to use your current account for, TSB has 5% up to £2,000.
The classic plus account.
It's a classic plus account, yeah. That doesn't come with a monthly fee. Mm. Nationwide, Nationwide Flex Direct, that gives 5% up to £2,500.
Something we don't know, Lee.
And, of course, First Direct is always a popular one, and that's got a 6% regular saving, which is not quite the same thing, but it does offer...
Also good for customer service.
Good for customer service. So you can have a look at our... We have sort of crunched the data on all of these accounts. You can have a look at our guide online, which shows all of these different products. And also, interestingly, last week as well, Santander launched the 123 Lite account, which comes with a £1 monthly fee, but it doesn't come with the interest, but it does come with the cash back. Yeah. So for current account customers that... perhaps aren't maximising that £20,000 because they don't have £20,000, but instead much smaller, you know, they might be dipping into the overdraft, you know, each month, but want to keep that cashback element, that 123 Lite account. I think Santander has realised this year that a lot of people might ditch that account or have been put off by that £5 monthly fee. So they've kind of done this sort of hybrid account. Are going to test the water with it and see if people are happy with it.
Well, we'll see. Report back to us if you would, Lee. But, Simon, you've had a lot of comments from people recommending hoarding your cash under the mattress. Indeed, I joked right at the start there, Dan Hyde's comment, the last time the Nation's Mattresses has had it this good, was the run on Northern Rock in 2007. We sort of joke, don't we?
Yeah, but this is a problem with the scenario of negative interest rates, and it's something that has been discussed by central bankers and economists, is that you have this thing called the zero lower bound, basically. The closer you get to zero, the less effect rates have. And then once you go below zero, obviously, you've crossed the zero lower bound. But people just start hoarding cash. So rather than putting the money in the bank, you keep the money somewhere else, because if you're going to get charged for keep putting the money in the bank, then you might as well just hold on to the cash. And so there was the suggestion, actually, from Andy Haldane, who's the Bank of England's chief economist, that a shift to digital money could solve that problem. So if we just had digital money rather than cash, then digital money would need to be stored somewhere, so there would always be the possibility of imposing negative interest rates on it. And that was a suggestion that absolutely delighted our readers, who are huge fans of low and negative interest rates, central bankers, economists, and suggestions of things like digital money. Mm-hmm. I imagine it had them rushing off to buy some gold and bury it in Bitcoin. Their garden. Yeah, God, no, don't buy Bitcoin. So what's the one thing I would say about this Santander thing is a way of cushioning the blow for savers is, as of April, we got this new personal savings allowance, which is, if you're a basic rate taxpayer, the first £1,000 of interest you can have tax-free, and if you're a higher rate taxpayer, it's the first £500. Now, you need to have a lot of money before you earn £1,000 worth of interest, and basically, previously, your interest would have been taxed unless it was an ISA. And so in that 123 account, you would have been paying at least 20% tax. That would have taken the rate down from 3% to 2.4%. So even if it goes to 2%, you're not really going from... if you compare it to a year ago, you're not going from 3 to 2, you're going from 2.4 to 2. And actually, if you're a higher rate taxpayer, then you would have only really been getting 1.8%. So actually, 2% now with your £500 savings allowance might still leave you better off. I'm sure that's not... that much of a cushioning of the blow.
Everyone helps,
you know. The tunnel,
but it's better than, it's definitely better than a mattress.
It is better than a mattress, I'll agree with that.
Hey, does anyone actually keep money under the mattress?
If you do, send us your address. We'll double check.
I want photos of people with money under their mattress.
In the jam jars. Coming up, we'll be talking about Lloyds announcing even further job cuts and branch closures. But just quickly, in a sign of perhaps the saving times, take a look at the online easy access account from National Counties Building Society. So popular was it, the account closed after just 4 days. The offer, a whopping 1.3%, Lee. Really?
It is absolutely incredible, isn't it, that an easy access account at 1.3% sold out in 4 days. But it is worth mentioning that National Counties Building Society is quite a small society. Mm-hmm. What happens is you know, they will launch this account to have a certain idea of how much money they want to draw in. If it gets filled in 4 days, it gets filled in 4 days. I mean, that is just the
so
demand for the product.
That practice is quite common, then, isn't it?
4 days is pretty quick. I have reported in the past, in previous years, you know, when rates were still crashing then, I didn't think things would get lower, but they have since. But there were examples of smaller building societies that were pulling accounts, you know, launched a Best Buy account one day, 3 days later it was gone. It'd be very surprising if a bigger sort of challenger bank did this, because they're probably looking to claw in more money. I don't know, you know, I don't know the ins and outs of how much money National Counties was looking for, but it seems like it wasn't a lot. Or it's just that there's such bad rates out there that 1.3% really leapt out of people. And we, especially at a time when we're talking about negative rates, people were worried. So you would take a 1.3% at the moment, because there's not LS out there that's sort of risk-free like this.
Are there any rules around how long you can offer a rate for a certain time? You know, like buying goods in the shops and how long it's been on sale for?
I don't believe so. I mean, if there was, I mean, I don't think it would be a maximum of a minimum of 4 days. I don't think there's any rules around it. I think, you know, it can do what it wants. It can offer rates what it wants. It can pull it when it wants. If you acted fast, then you would have got this absolutely bumper 1.3%. Mm. If you're slow these days, unfortunately, those kind of killer deals are disappearing quick.
And also today, talking about savers, the FCA, the City Watchdog, watering down its demands on providers to show how much extra interest that savers could get from investing in another account. What's going on here, Simon?
Well, there was this plan to sort of make the banks and building societies tell you how much extra interest you could get from switching. And this was to do with all these people sat on these legacy savings accounts where you've got your money in the account and then the rate falls, but you just never get around to moving it, and it's customer inertia. It kind of feeds into a campaign that we had, the online rate honesty campaign, where we argued that basically in this day and age, it was not beyond the realms of possibility for your bank or building society to display what your savings rate was when you looked at your account online. And that actually the only reason why they wouldn't be doing this is because they wanted to hide it from you so that you didn't move your money to a place where you could get a better rate. And the FCA came up with a very similar plan, actually, to give people these notifications. But basically it looks like it's going to be watered down and it's not actually going to come in.
Well, they found that 8 out of 10 Easy Access accounts haven't been switched for 3 years. Huge, 160 billion stuck in Easy Access accounts, paying less than 0.5%. And they had thought that a letter from your provider showing the benefits in a box on the front page would double the number of switching from 2.7% to 5.6%. Doesn't seem huge, but the regulator said this did not have the impact that it expected, and they are looking at alternatives. But there's a bit of a savings crisis. Would you say that's fair?
I think that's fair. I mean, look, when 5 years ago you were getting rates of, 3% or whatnot on an Easy Access and much higher for fixing, people were used to having higher rates to put their money away on. Now we're looking at things like pension freedoms. People are, a bit better off than they were in a financial crisis. Probably got a little bit more surplus money. They don't really know what to do with it, some people. That's why we're seeing so much money getting thrown into sort of buy-to-let. That's why, people will get more appetite now for taking out something like a stocks and shares ISA. The savings are just so low. I think people just can't be bothered. I mean, 0.5%, you're saying there, 3 years that money's been in Easy Access, £160 billion. I mean, that is a big chunk of money to just have sitting around earning 0.5% interest. But when you can just switch it and get 1.3% and that account's gone in 4 days, it's almost not worth it, isn't it? I mean, you've got to have your finger on the pulse to get a 1.3% rate. It's just bananas.
Well, that's one element of it, isn't it? You don't know where to put your money, but also the fact of, I suppose, the cost of living. And Simon, you're going to be talking about credit cards and how much we're spending at the moment. But I suppose this is where your Minor Investor blog comes in, isn't it? Is investing the place to turn if you can't find it in savings?
It is, yes. But you need to be thinking longer term. So if you're one of those people who does have a pot of money in savings, and there are some people, there are many people out there who don't have any savings. They struggle to even save up a rainy day fund. Once you've got your rainy day fund set up, which is normally recommended to be about 2 to 3 months worth of post-tax earnings, then you can start looking at how you make any savings that you have above that work that bit harder. And one way to do that is to invest. And I think that there are lots of people out there who should be investing but don't invest.
Yeah.
And I think one of the problems is that they never get over that hurdle to actually start investing. I think, one of the questions... Interestingly, you ask people this question. You say, why don't you invest? And they'll say things like, oh, well, I'm just not an investor. But then it's like, well, do you have a pension with your company? Do you have a defined benefit pension, a final salary pension? Probably not now. If you've got a defined contribution pension scheme, then that's invested. You are an investor. You know, you're already investing. So it's not a them and us kind of scenario. But then they'll say, oh, well, I don't have enough. I don't feel like I have enough money now to do it. But in the future, I might do it when I've got more money. But the thing is once you've once you've got that rainy day fund, if you've got £1,000 above it, it's actually easier to invest that £1,000 above it than if you have £10,000 above it. Because if you have £10,000 above it, then if you invest all of that money in one go, that big lump sum, and then it falls, you're going to feel much worse than if you invest £1,000 and then it falls. And that's the big concern, people, you know, investing money and then it's suddenly falling. And then also if you invest regularly, for example, so say you invest £100 a month, basically, then you're much less risk of that one big fall hitting you, and you're just accumulating money over time, and you can invest very simply in something like a tracker fund, you know, a global tracker fund which just follows the market, doesn't have a fund manager trying to pick winning shares that are going to beat the market. And it's super simple, the costs are very low, and that gives you exposure to the entire world. And what you're relying on is the economic growth of the world, and the businesses around the world's ability to make money and pay back that money as a reward to their shareholders, you know, dividends and things like that, just building up your wealth over time. And if you look at any, you know, study that looks into this, basically there's the long-term return on cash, there's the long-term return on, you know, government bonds, and then there's the long-term return from investing in the stock market. And once you go beyond a certain period, you really start to see those returns build up.
You're listening to Consuming Issues. This is Money Editor Simon Lambert and Consumer Affairs Editor Lee Boyce.
This is Money, brought to you in partnership with NSandI.com, helping you keep on top of your savings whenever, wherever.
A very warm welcome. I'm Georgie Frost. This is Share Radio, the team from the financial website of the year. This is Money, back in the studio with me for our weekly catch-up in partnership with NSNI. A little bit later on in the show, Britain is drowning in plastic. How do we break our addiction to credit cards? But first, hashtag Brexcuses, it's been called. Lloyds this week suggesting Brexit played a role in their decision to axe a further 3,000 jobs on top of the 9,000 redundancies already planned. They also revealed a doubling of branch closures, with 200 more set to vanish from high streets by the end of 2017. Now, the partly state-owned high street banking giant announced the cost-cutting measures in 2014, so well before the 23rd of June. Here's Sky City editor Mark Kleinman.
It's fair to say that Lloyds was drawing up plans for these additional cuts before the referendum took place, but the outlook post the referendum result means that there is more uncertainty. We're not just seeing that from Lloyds, we're seeing a whole host of companies talking about that uncertainty, and I think that has enabled Lloyds to announce this and cite the referendum result as a factor in its decision. If you look at what the chief executive Antonio Horta Azzurro has said, he said, following the EU referendum, the outlook for the UK economy is uncertain. And while the precise impact is dependent upon a number of factors, including EU negotiations and political and economic events, a deceleration of growth seems likely. The other factor in the decision to close branches is that more customers are using digital banking services. Lloyds' own online service now has more than 12 million customers.
Well, Lloyds blamed cuts to changes in people's banking habits, the effect of interest rates remaining low for the foreseeable future. Unions, though, urging Lloyds Bank to reconsider plans to close branches and cut thousands of jobs. Here's Rob McGregor from Unite.
They're referring to the increased use of digitalisation in the delivery of banking services. Now, it is true that more people are using internet banking and mobile apps to carry out their banking transactions, but millions of other customers either can't or won't use digital, and those customers are in danger of being left behind. And also the communities in which the branches that are going to be closed will also be left behind. The bank announced 3,000 job losses at the same time as a doubling of its half-yearly profits to £2.5 billion. And let's not forget that it was only 6 or 7 years ago that the British taxpayer had to bail out the Lloyds Banking Group to the tune of tens of billions of pounds. Now, not all of that money has actually been repaid. So Lloyds Bank have got a unique relationship with the British taxpayer, and we believe it is wrong and inappropriate to be cutting bank branches at this time. Unfortunately, changes in interest rates do have a bearing on the success and profitability of banks. But let's not kid ourselves here. Lloyds Banking Group is incredibly profitable. It's turned the corner in a remarkable way since the crash of 2008-2009.
Well, as Rob McGregor from Unite there pointed out, profits did double to $2.45 billion. What impact, though, will all this have on the prospect of a Lloyds share sale? Simon, explain all. What's going on?
Well, the government would quite like to get rid of the remaining stake, taxpayer stake in Lloyds, and so there was this plan to have a big share sale, and it was probably going to be, you know, in the style of a big share sale, big public share sale. There was going to be a discount to the current share price. There was going to be, what was it? It wasn't buy two, get one free. It was like buy five, get one free if you held on to them to the long term or something. There's going to be some kind of supermarket style deal to encourage people not to stag the shares, mm, as they did with Royal Mail, where they basically bought them and then flogged them quickly to make a profit. But that was canned or put on ice, so to speak, in January after big sort of stock market falls and turbulence over the new year. So the Chancellor at the time, Mr. Osborne, said, no, we're not going to do it now. It's not a good time to do it. And obviously then we thought it was going to happen again after the EU referendum. But now that we've voted for Brexit rather than Remain, it's a big question about whether it's going to happen, because the Lloyds share price is down 25% on the EU referendum. It's about 54p at the moment. The break-even price that often gets talked about is about 74, 75p, because that's what we bought in at. But actually, because Lloyds has paid a load of dividends since then, I saw a suggestion that actually the break-even price for the government is now down to about 7.5p. which seems super, super low. This was suggested by one of the analysts at Hargreaves Lansdowne. So actually, we could sell out now. We'd still have made a profit. But I don't think that this share sale is going to go ahead unless that Lloyds share price is considerably higher. Of course, however, what it's worth remembering is that if you are one of the hundreds of thousands of people who signed up to register your interest in the Lloyds share sale, then basically those shares are now available at a 25% discount to what they were available at just over a month ago. So you could wait for the Lloyds share sale if you think Lloyds is a good investment. But on the basis that it's probably not going to happen until those shares are back at 75p, you might be better off buying them now when they're cheaper. Because even allowing for the discount that you'll get when they do the share sale and the supermarket style bog off or whatever they're doing, you probably still get a better deal. The only other thing I'd say about this digital banking and branch closures thing is this is going to this is going to rumble on for years and years and years. The next 5 years is going to see loads of this. More and more people are using online banking, are using mobile banking. There is much less need for bank branches. I totally get the point where, you know, there are people who need to be able to get to a bank branch, but the banks are in a very difficult position because there is much less need for them. They are very expensive to run, and then you've got people like me who would do anything within their power to avoid going into a bank branch. But the thing I would say about these banks is they've got people working to try and make this whole thing much, much better for people and to try and engage people who are kind of excluded from this. So to be fair to some of the banks, they have tried to do some of this stuff. Like Barclays had its digital eagles, which sounded like really stupid. But actually, I think it probably is quite a good idea. Mm-hmm. But I know someone who works at Lloyds in the kind of digital banking side. Not talking about, you know, just doing online banking or whatever, but ideas like, can you take a photograph of a cheque and pay it in that way and stuff like that. He's one of the smartest people I know. So he's, you know, dreaming up good ideas to make people's banking lives better.
It's all right, everybody. Simon's mates are on this.
Is it the same guy that's got the Watford hat?
No, it's not the same guy that's got the Watford hat.
Good to know. But it would not be good, though, Lee. Surely one of 1,500 communities, this is according to campaigners, 1,500 communities no longer have a single bank branch. Yes, we're getting involved in technology. Anthony Brown at the British Bankers Association saying customers love the new technology. Mm. So should we mourn 200 more lost bank branches? Do we need them when, as Simon said, you know, we logged on into banking apps 11 million times a day last year?
It's true. Do you know, the saddest thing about this is the branches that will probably be shut will be in those sort of smaller towns and branches at places like London where probably people don't, you know, it's just a higher footfall, so people are going in. I don't know what the solution is, because I do sympathise with banks. They've got massive, massive, you know, loads of branches that I don't really know what's happening with them. But I tell you one fact that I took from this, and I was like, wow, that is incredible. It had 75,000 workers. So it had 75,000 employees in 2014. By the end of next year, it's going to be 12,000.
Wow.
That is a massive round of job cuts, isn't it? That is absolutely mammoth. And Lloyds is probably, if not the most popular place for people with current accounts, like personal banking customers. So is the customer service going to sort of dwindle, you know, because there's less staff? Or is it the fact that we all just are now happy to bank online and do all our stuff online? But I don't know, Lloyds does nothing to help itself. To blame Brexit on these cuts and job losses is absolutely pathetic.
This has been going on for a long time. You just pointed out, Simon, can we blame Brexit for any of this?
I think you can blame Brexit for anything you want at the moment,
can't
you?
Well, that's true.
And we have been. It's a great Brexit excuse. I'm sorry I haven't done that Brexit. But I think the excuse is going to wear off soon. I mean, to be fair to Lloyds, it didn't directly say that. It was grouped together some stuff in the statement. It all came out in the same report. Mm. They said basically Brexit will affect us because it's going to cause a slowdown in the economy. It's probably likely to cause a slowdown in the economy. Lloyds is very, very highly linked to the fortunes of the economy, so obviously Brexit will affect it. But and then at the same time, it said I'll be cutting some jobs and losing some branches, and so it all got bundled together in the reports. And then Lloyds did clarify, no, we're not blaming this on Brexit. Sorry that you got that impression. Maybe they should have come out and said explicitly in the report, and we're not shutting these branches and losing these jobs because of Brexit. Maybe they should have said that. Yeah. But I've got the Lloyds figures in front of me.
Mm.
And I would like to make one point that I have made many times before about our banks and building societies, who like to send us letters every so often telling us about another one of their favourite excuses, the low interest rate environment, and how tough it is in the low interest rate environment. And they're very, very sorry. They'd love to do better by us, and they'd love to pay us better savings rates, but they just can't. And it's not their fault. It's that nasty old Bank of England. And it's very upsetting for them, you know, but they're sorry. We've cut your rate again. Lloyds' report. Net interest income increased 1% to 5.782 billion, reflecting the improvement in net interest margin to 2.74% half year to 30th of June 2015, 2.62%. So basically, what that says is Lloyds is making more money on the gap between savings and loans, right? So when it sends you a letter telling you that it's really sorry in this low interest rate environment, well, its financial figures say something completely different. It's making more money off its net interest income than it was before. Banks, building societies, just tell the truth. You're cashing in.
Be mature, like Simon. But for now, you don't see the point, perhaps, in saving, especially after listening to all that. Let's just spend instead. Let's go nuts on our credit cards. No, really don't. The Financial Conduct Authority have been taking a look at the credit card market, and it is not pretty. We've got a final report this week, some headline stats. Over 5 million cards, or around a tenth of the total, may never be paid off. Around 1.4 million people have only been making minimum repayments for at least 3 years in a row. Now, the regulator previously found that although competition had worked fairly well for most of us, there was this concern about the scale of potentially problematic debt. So if we are all drowning in debt, isn't it time for a lifeline? Well, Martin James, formerly of the Financial Ombudsman Service, had some ideas.
Well, it's cracking that cycle of debt, and that's certainly one of the things that the FCA were looking at very closely. The problem is, if you're just making minimum repayments, the interest can actually increase how much you are outstanding once the charges go on. And once you're being charged and you've got debit interest and everything else, your balance just creeps further and further away out of control. And the next thing you know, the whole thing's been passed to a debt collection agency. And this is where people really, really get into difficulties. If someone's just paying the minimum amount of money on the credit card for an extended period of time, that's a sign that they're struggling to make ends meet. So that's the point where card companies, who can intervene if you tell them that you're struggling, can help you to find a way to get out of that cycle, maybe suspending debt or interest just for a short period to allow you to get back on your feet. But you have to ask. And should you have to ask is the question. And the answer to that is probably not. No, it's in the credit card company's interest to actually step in and help people.
Well, it comes as the Bank of England published its money and credit statistical release for June. Consumer credit rose by 1.8 billion compared to the average of 1.5 billion over the previous month. That's a 12-month growth rate of over 10%. Now, within this figure, credit card lending increased by 0.6 billion in June compared to the average of 0.4 billion over the previous 6 months. Now, despite this, we're hearing consumer confidence has taken its biggest dive for over a quarter of a century. Here's Joe Staton from the market research organisation GFK.
It's a metric that we watch very closely. A lot of people watch it. It's an indicators indicate, so it shows that something's going on within people's minds. I think what's interesting when you look at the numbers, and we've got a long way to fall. If the numbers to fall to the, you know, the lowest we were at the dip of the last financial cycle, you know, we've got another 20 plus places to go. What I think is interesting is to look at the number, and people are more concerned about the wider economic situation rather than just their personal economic situation.
So consumer confidence dropping quite substantially, and yet we're spending on our credit cards. Simon, you've been writing about this, haven't you?
Yeah. So the FCA came out with this report, which it was a little bit dry. Probably lots of people will have just completely ignored it. But it basically said that the credit card market was working okay, reasonably well, mm-hmm. but there were things, it identified problems, and it wanted to try and, you know, come up with some solutions for this. One of which was sort of text and email kind of timely alerts when special deals like balance transfers are going to end, being able to move your payment date so that it was in line with, you know, the day that you got paid. Mm-hmm. And encouraging people to up their payments. But actually the report underneath it was really interesting. And there was some amazing, you know, statistics in there. Amazingly bad, really.
Yeah.
And I mean bad in the bad sense, not the Michael Jackson bad sense. Like, so basically, of our credit card balances, 28% of credit cards have their balances fully repaid each month. Mm-hmm. Great, brilliant. I would say that our readers probably err very much towards that side of things. And their mindset would be, well, I pay mine back. Yet 25% of people, 25% of cards only had minimum payments made, and 15% didn't even get to that. So basically that means an astonishing 40% of credit card payments are for the minimum payment or less. I mean, that is unbelievable. The report then highlighted that basically on current balances and payment patterns, 5.1 million credit cards would take more than 10 years to have their balance cleared. And later on in it, it basically said that these fit this pattern of cards that are almost never repaid. Mm. So there's this whole big chunk of people with credit card debt who basically just don't ever have a hope in repaying it.
And you say that impacts us all.
And that impacts us all. They're making the minimum payments. And even if you're one of those people who pays off your credit card in full every month, right, chances are you know someone who's been hit by this. You might not know that you know someone because they might not have told you. Because a lot of people, you know, they try and keep quiet about this, they brush it under the carpet. But there'll be loads of people out there who've got maybe a couple of grand on a credit card and they're just paying that monthly payment of, you know, £40 or whatever, and they've got no hope of clearing it. And the problem is that, you know, that stops people from doing things. It stops people from taking entrepreneurial risks. It stops people from moving jobs. It stops people from starting a family. You know, there's a human cost involved in this that also then affects, you know, the economy as a whole. And I don't think we're doing enough to sort it out, because these are the kind of people who, you know, they can't get the super low rates and the super long balance transfers and the cheap personal loans that would allow them to pay off the debt. Instead, they're faced like 18, 20% interest and like just, you know, trying to push a boulder up a hill that never feels like they're getting anywhere. And just to put it into context, for someone with a £2,000 outstanding credit card debt and a 17% interest rate, if they were making the £30 minimum monthly payment, it would take 17 years to clear the debt. So it probably feels to them like there's no point even bothering to try.
So then what is the answer? Lee, finally, is the more sensible one of the three of us here. I mean, these combine surely historical, psychological, economical issues with which to try and find a solution to this. We have become so hooked on credit card. I mean, they should never be called credit. You're not credit, it's debt cards.
It's very true, Georgie, and a lot of people get themselves in trouble with credit cards, and there's, you know, some very serious implications if you start to put in some monthly bills on your credit card and it slowly starts to creep up. And as Simon says, it is like pushing a boulder up a hill. How do you dent into it? How do you start paying that debt down? Now, I think some of these credit cards some providers, I should say, look, you've had this credit card for a number of years. Mm. You've never got it down to zero. You know, we can do something to help you. If it's a repayment plan and a rate freeze for, you know, maybe 12 months to help people start shifting some of this debt away. Of course, would that ever happen? No. Will the FCA ever make this happen? No, because it's pretty toothless. I just like to see some of this credit card debt paid down because it is actually worrying, this debt mounting, I think, anyway. And, you know, anything that can be done to help these people would be beneficial, wouldn't it, to the whole society and Britain as a whole.
I'll throw in my sensible piece of advice. Go to This Is Money website.
Well, I had two ideas in here, basically, which are around... So companies can identify these people. They've got big data now. They can identify exactly who these people are. And I think after a certain point, if they're basically making these minimum payments, they should be told to offer these people the equivalent of a personal loan at a rate of like 6 or 7%, and then it locks them into the payments for a certain amount of time and clears the debt. It's going to be a lot easier to clear those balances at 6% interest than 20%. And we need to teach people about this stuff in schools, proper, you know, personal finance education, but probably not in personal finance education classes, GCSE maths, the classes you've got to pay attention to, that tells people sometimes debt is good because it helps you to invest in your future because you can't afford a whole house in one go. But other times, when you're using it to basically fund your day-to-day existence, you're borrowing money from your future self and you're making yourself poorer in the future.
Editor Simon Lambert, Consumer Affairs Editor Lee Boyce.
This Is Money, brought to you in partnership with NS&I, looking after the nation's savings for over 150 years.